Backed by popular demand, the AFA Easter Button is here. The bold new stained glass design features the cross at the center under the message, "He is risen." This beautiful design tells the story in one line. It's a conversation starter, so you might share the saving truth of Jesus' death and resurrection. A 10-pack of buttons is $15. 10 or more 10-packs are just $7 each. Order today at resources.afa.net. That's resources.afa.net. He is risen indeed.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Today's Monday, March the 17th, 2025, and we again thank you for listening. Joining me in studio is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
That's it, folks. Just three of us today. We don't have a fourth brain trust in here. Huh? So we're each going to have to carry this show a third, a third, a third. Right?
Wait, let me see if I make sure I got the math right.
Yeah. Third, a third,
okay,
third.
Yes, that's right. It's a third, a third, a third.
It's one, two, three.
Now, we will have Steve Jordahl coming on in an hour, but yeah. We don't have any guests. It's just on us. Mm. Hey, listen, I'm fully comfortable with that.
Yeah, every once in a while you just need to put the pressure on yourself, see if you can still perform.
Absolutely.
All right, so much to talk about today. Sadly, Fred, the news, leading the news is the death and destruction over the weekend caused by the weather.
Yeah, the death toll continues to climb, at least 40. Some media reports are saying 42 now from the tornadoes that came across the southern part of the United States. You probably have seen some of the pictures from Tylertown, Mississippi, southern part of Mississippi, at least six people there dead. Some of the pictures really do display the power of these tornadoes, of trees just snapped in half, of buses, school buses, in one picture, school buses being tossed up on the roof of a school. It's just the demonstration of the kind of power we are talking about with these. And it's just, the stories always come out after these things. And then in the out west,
then didn't we have Arkansas hit hard, Missouri?
Arkansas, Missouri, Louisiana, Mississippi.
By tornadoes.
Tornadoes.
Yeah, Alabama.
And then in Texas and Oklahoma, we're talking about wildfires that have completely destroyed. I think one count says at least 130 fires were reported across Oklahoma, and nearly 400 homes were damaged or destroyed, according to the governor there.
I saw in the early part of the storm, I think it was the same storm. This is in the kind of the Oklahoma, the panhandle region.
Mm-hmm.
The winds were so high. I saw videos of 18-wheelers being blown over while they were trying to drive. So to your point, Fred, the power of what they call Mother Nature, the power of nature is just unmatched. And when it comes with its full fury, you find a safe place and you ride it out. That's all you can do.
If you can find a safe place.
Right.
For many of these folks, I mean, I know what they tell you. It's nice to have these underground shelters.
Right.
But not a lot of people have those.
Right.
And, they'd say, if it's a motorhome of some type, or mobile home, find somewhere else. Well, it's not always easy to find somewhere else at that moment.
And you don't want to get caught in transit.
No.
A lot of times a tornado warning is sudden.
Yes.
Even though we do get some advance warning.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get in your car.
You can't get in your car and drive.
Getting in your car is kind of dumb.
Right.
Honestly. Once a tornado warning has been issued, then you're within minutes usually of the tornado being, if it's coming your way. I mean, to get in your car is just
right.
You need to go ahead and make your plans to be
In the shelter.
Or at least nearby.
Yeah.
Where else in your house can you get that's the safest place, yeah. You know?
I just want to give a shout-out, too, to these local meteorologists here, our home base in Tupelo. I mean, they were on the air Friday night, like at 1 and 2 in the morning when the sirens went off here in the Tupelo area. And then for hours on end right. On Saturday as this was unfolding. And giving out information sometimes moment by moment. Our Tupelo, our home base here, is one of those communities where the Natchez Trace Parkway runs through. It starts in Nashville, goes to Vicksburg. And at one moment, there was one county, they came out and they said, we're shutting it down because there's trees falling all over the trace, as we call it, and cars being affected by that.
Right.
So thank God for those people who stay up and stay with the story all the way through, because it helps a lot of people. They start showing live pictures of flooding. That's another part of the story. Here in the northern part of Mississippi, we didn't get a tornado per se, but we had a lot of flooding that's going on.
Yes, a lot of rain.
People get in trouble, as Tim was pointing out. They get in their cars. Let's go see where the problem is.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well,
it's 42 dead right at this point.
Yeah.
That's one report.
I didn't know till this morning there were that many people lost their lives.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. Next story, Fred.
Well, there were many stories this weekend. One of them being an encounter between the Trump administration and a judge, U.S. District Judge James E. Boasberg in the District of Columbia. The ACLU and another group went to that judge and tried to stop President Trump, his administration, Homeland Security, from shipping more than 200 gang members, illegal gang members, people who had come into this country under the Biden administration, shipping them out to El Salvador. And this judge at one point said, you know, I want the planes had taken off, I believe, from Houston, heading towards the El Salvador and Honduras, I believe it was. And the judge said, you tell those planes to turn around and come back. And the Trump lawyer said, we can't do that. They're already in international airspace. Well, Tom Holman, who is Trump's border czar, had this to say about what happened on the weekend with these two plane loads of these gang members who have now been deported. Cut number two.
Again, information was leaked somehow. I don't quite know how it got leaked, but there was a court, an emergency court hearing on five people that were on schedule to be deported. The judge had a written order that said these five people can't be removed right now. It wasn't until this flight was already in international waters, heading down to El Salvador, that the judge made some comment about returning the flights. We're already in international waters. We're outside the borders of the United States. I'm the border czar. Once you're outside the border, you know, it is what it is. But they're in international waters, already on the way south, close to the landing. You know what? We did what we had to do. Remove terrorists, significant public safety threats from the United States by the order of the proclamation by the President of the United States. We did the right thing. Every day, the men and women of ICE are going to be in the neighborhoods of this nation arresting criminal, illegal alien, public safety threats, and national security threats. They're not going to stop us.
Now, the ruling by U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, what's being questioned, does he have the jurisdiction? Does he have the right to do this kind of thing? Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett talked about that. Cut three.
And I think the judge here, James Boasberg, has made several errors. First of all, he issued a temporary restraining order without so much as a hearing or allowing the Trump administration to utter a word. Second of all, the plaintiffs being held were in Texas. This is a Washington, D.C. judge. He doesn't have jurisdiction. And finally, the exclusive remedy here under that law is what's known as a habeas petition. It's not a temporary restraining order. Boasman seems unbothered by that. And then he exceeds his authority, ordering planes returned to the U.S.
while they're in air.
Yeah, I mean, he has no authority for that. Once a plane leaves U.S. soil and is outside U.S. airspace, no judge has authority for that. So I think this is judicial activism. There's too much of that. Judges in the lower courts and the federal district courts, allow their personal animus and political views to dictate their decisions.
By the way, Judge Boasberg is an Obama appointee.
So he is a federal judge for the District of Columbia area?
Correct.
Yeah, so that was a good explanation there by Greg Jarrett.
Yes.
On why what the judge tried to do was unconstitutional. So when I read that the other day, that the judge says turn the planes around, going like, you're telling me one judge in Washington, D.C. can order the deep cessation, is that the way you say it?
Cessation, yeah.
Of the executive branch deporting criminals to another country? What, you know?
Well, and plus it was he verbalized that the planes should come back. That wasn't even in his written order. So there was all
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of things that were wrong with what this judge did, which is why it's being called, and I think Greg Jarrett rightly characterizes this as judicial activism. He's not following procedure. I don't know. I wish Congress has the constitutional authority to limit the actions of judges. And in fact, Congress has the authority, if they wanted to completely get rid of the federal judiciary and replace it with another type of system. I just wish they would limit district judges to ruling on their own district.
There you go.
This is your district. You're over this particular district, you know, Washington, D.C. area. You can rule on things that apply to your district. That's it. Remember, we had a district judge in Hawaii.
Right.
On the first Trump administration, basically saying, I'm shutting this down nationwide.
Yeah.
Well, you're not on the Supreme Court.
Right.
You know, this is delusions of grandeur. You're over
That's a
Hawaii.
Good point.
That's your district. If there's something that you think is unconstitutional, you say it's unconstitutional in my district.
Right.
If you want to make a federal case out of this, you appeal it to the appellate
right.
court, and you can take it all the way up. But the ruling will only be
right.
on what I did in my district.
Yeah.
I wish Congress would clarify that, because this is nuts. You get federal district judges who, one will say, now Trump can't do this, nationwide injunction, and you get another district judge saying, well, Trump can do this, I'm lifting the injunction. It's insanity.
Yeah, so if they would just be just rule on cases that involve their own particular district. That's why they have districts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh? We're talking about federal judges here, folks.
Yes.
You have the, you know, federal judges are all over America, and they have different jurisdictions.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They have different jurisdictions. Well, Tom Holman there, you know, he is, man, he's been on Red Bull for about since he got
his wings.
He lives for this, man.
Yeah.
He's going to clean up the streets, so to speak.
He was frustrated for 4 years seeing what the Biden administration was doing to this country by allowing unfettered access.
Yep.
And now he's coming in, and like you said, now he's got wings.
And basically he says, you know, you've got these mayors, like mayor of Chicago, other places, mayor of Boston, saying we're going to protect these people. And Tom Holman says, you can try, but we're coming.
Yeah.
We're coming for these
Meanwhile,
people.
Meanwhile, surveys I've seen of the actual citizens of these communities, Chicago, Boston, Denver, when they're questioned by reporters are surveyed, do you approve of ICE taking the violent criminals and deporting them? They say, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Huh? They don't want them in their town.
Well, and these are people who aren't living in gated communities.
Right.
Like political big shots.
That's true.
With their own private security. These are people who have to face.
Let me ask you this real quick. I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway. These mayors, like the mayor of Boston, the mayor of Chicago, for example, maybe not so much the mayor of New York, Adams, but and the mayor of Denver, why do you think they want to spend their time defending the, quote, rights of illegal, even criminals, to be roaming our streets in the country? Why do you think they care so much about this? that they're defending the criminals.
Yeah, I think first, in general, they are pro-criminal. In other words, they believe in protecting the rights of criminals almost as their first impulse, because the way they have come to their worldview, they believe these people are criminals by no fault of their own. It's because of the racist system,
okay,
or the economically unjust system. And so we need,
they get a free pass.
They get a free pass. And frankly, I think most of them are globalist.
Mm-hmm.
They hate the country, mm-hmm, our country, and
they don't believe in American sovereignty.
They don't believe in borders.
Right.
And so we shouldn't be making these, in other words, we shouldn't be sending these people home because they are home. They can't, right, cross that border.
They think borders are artificial, and they think that they are immoral.
And nationalistic.
And nationalistic. I got you.
And they're willing to put the lives of
their own citizens.
Of their own citizens.
Yeah.
We have seen what some of these illegal immigrants, these violent illegal immigrants, have done. President Trump, once again, in his kind of State of the Union address there back a couple of weeks ago, remember, I had the moms that had lost these daughters. Right. I mean, it's so sad to see. These are deaths that were not necessary. These are deaths, a direct result of Joe Biden's border policies.
And that's another good point. The Trump derangement syndrome that we see on the left is clearly a real thing.
Yes.
If you can't stand up and applaud a 13-year-old boy, cancer, who's battled cancer because he was made a quote-unquote Secret Service agent, because you don't want to give any credit to Donald Trump,
yeah,
that's a sickness in your mind. If you're Joe Biden, and I know we're going to get to this story, if you're Joe Biden and you don't want Elon Musk to rescue two people stranded in space, because that would give a victory to Elon Musk and Donald Trump, you're going to let them sit up there for months and months and months, mm, because you don't want to give credit to Elon Musk, yeah, or to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
There's something seriously wrong with you.
Yeah. But it also goes to the thinking. It's all about power. And if you have to lie, which Alejandro Mayorkas did, yes, under oath before Congress, he said the border was secure while Fox was showing pictures of people streaming across that, yes, border. He lied, and he's not being held accountable.
Right.
Joe Biden lied. Now, Joe Biden told the truth when he was running for president. He said, I'll invite a surge, yes, on the border. That's the only time he told the truth on that story.
Right.
So we have all of that, and we're going to talk a little bit about the latest NBC poll, which plays into where the Democratic Party is today in the minds of the people of America.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Next story, Fred.
Well, if the president doesn't have enough on his agenda already, he's going to have a conversation tomorrow with Vladimir Putin as President Trump attempts to bring the war in Ukraine to an end. Here's what President Trump had to say aboard Air Force One last evening, cut number 6.
I'll be speaking to President Putin on Tuesday. A lot of work's been done over the weekend. We want to see if we can bring that war to an end. Maybe we can, maybe we can't, but I think we have a very good chance.
Also, Fox News' Jackie Heinrich questioned National Security Advisor Michael Waltz about this discussion that's coming up tomorrow. Cut 7.
How do you know President Trump isn't being played right now by Putin?
Well, look, yeah, that's almost laughable. I'll take President Trump in dealing with the likes of Xi, of Kim Jong-un, with Putin and others. Certainly, ahead of his predecessor, we know who we're dealing with. We know who we're dealing with on all sides. And we are going to engage in diplomacy. We are engaging in diplomacy. And that will involve both carrots and sticks to get both sides to the table.
Who was that?
That's Waltz. He is a National Security Advisor, Michael Waltz.
Okay. So tomorrow, President Trump and Vladimir Putin will talk directly?
By phone.
Okay.
Phone discussion.
Well.
Now, my understanding, and here's part of the sticking point, is that Russia wants what they're calling an ironclad guarantee that Ukraine will not be allowed to join NATO.
That is correct.
Ukraine doesn't want anyone, themselves included, to make that promise because they want some guarantee that they'll be protected from further Russian aggression. So I'm not sure how Trump, if Trump can finesse this and get NATO to agree, that would provide Belarus and Ukraine as something of a buffer against NATO being on the Russian border. But then Europe is going to want some kind of guarantee from Russia that they will not no further aggression into Ukraine. That's a hard, I'm not sure how you thread that needle, but if Trump can pull that off, listen, he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for helping to solve that.
I wouldn't hold your breath on that nomination.
No.
But Trump had a team in Moscow last week talking with Putin's people. So in advance of this conversation, I think there's been some preliminary discussion on what both sides want. Apparently, according to Trump, land and power plants are part of the conversation around bringing the war to a close. Because in the midst of this three-year battle right now, Russia has been able to gain a lot of the Ukrainian, that third, one-third eastern portion of the country, and they've grabbed a power plant. So that's all part of it. And then on the Ukrainian side, they want guarantees of security. Zelensky has talked about that a lot. They want guarantees of security after a ceasefire and a possible peace deal.
Well, we'll see how this goes. I tend to favor the Russians coming out on top here. By that, I mean, I think Vladimir Putin is going to get what he wants. Probably going to get a third of the country of the Ukraine or a quarter of it. And then he's going to get a guarantee by President Trump that Ukraine won't be allowed to join NATO. Now, you know, who knows what the future holds, because would a guarantee by President Trump be binding to the next president, whoever he may be? You know what I'm saying?
No, and so, it has to come from NATO as an organization.
Yeah, not just the U.S.
Not just the U.S. And at this point, most of the countries in Europe also seem to be determined to punish Russia. Obviously, they were the aggressor here in invading Ukraine. I don't know how you get NATO on board, but
what if Trump says, I tried my best, and NATO doesn't agree to the terms that Vladimir Putin is insisting on, that is that Ukraine not be allowed to join NATO. For those who don't know, and most people do, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty
Organization,
was designed post-World War II to protect the from Western European countries from being invaded. No, that's not correct. It provided a unified defense against the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, which has been reduced to Russia now, basically. So that's why it was created, true?
Yes, because the Soviet Union also had what was called the Warsaw Pact.
Yeah.
So Czechoslovakia, Hungary, those countries, East Germany, they were allied with the Soviet Union.
So, for example, if one of the NATO countries was attacked by Russia or the Soviet Union, then all of them would be committed together to going to war against them.
Right.
So it was kind of everybody put your hand in the huddle and we're all in this together. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about NATO defending Europe. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forth, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. What does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry. By rescuing, on average, 200 babies' lives a day, they are putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. How many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God. Please join the cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this show, and you're listening to AFR. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and as always, we thank you for listening on this Monday, March the 17th. When is Easter, by the way?
Next month.
April, maybe.
I'm talking about the Western. For us here in the U.S.,
it is the 20th April. Of April.
The 20th of April is Easter.
Western Eastern?
What'd you say?
Well, Eastern Christians, I think they're usually a week later. It has to do with...
They're wrong. But anyway, if they want to go ahead with that, go ahead with that.
Growing up, I had always had two Easters because my dad's side of the family was Catholic and my mom's side of the family was Greek Orthodox. So we had two Easters.
Did you have two Christmases? That would be a child.
No,
that would be a child's dream right
no,
there.
No, but Eastern churches, actually, their Christmas is January 6th.
Really?
Yeah.
Both sides can give you the reasons for their dates, okay?
Right.
But the Easter celebration that
most of America,
the Western world, celebrates would be in April. What did you say? The 20th.
April 20th. Yes.
And go ahead, Fred.
Well, I have a serious question for Ed.
Yes. I can answer serious questions too, Fred. But
no.
Oh, well,
this is Ed.
This is a setup.
This is Ed's family.
Oh, okay, got you.
Which Easter did the Easter Bunny come on?
That was always Western. That's when we got the chocolate bunnies,
the eggs.
Yeah, on the East, the Greek Orthodox Easter, we did like hard boiled eggs
and incense,
and they were colored red, and we would do this cracking thing where you have this competition. You'd hold one egg, someone would crack, and whoever's egg cracked. Anyway, it was.
It sounds like a riddle.
Now, my daughter-in-law, Whitney, texted me, and she said, Orthodox Easter and Western Easter are actually the same day this year. So
there's peace.
So that for, yeah.
There's peace in the church.
So there's peace.
The West and East have come to a peace agreement.
That's right. See, Zelensky, Putin, it can be done.
Right. It can be done, ladies and gentlemen.
But it has to do with... the equinox this and the moon that, and it's how many weeks after the
lunar? Anyway. The lunar.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the lunar doesn't the lunar.
Oh, the lunar something.
The lunar something has something to do with it.
When the moon is in the whatever.
That's a mare. Actually,
well, when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie.
That's Amore. And that's Amore is the weekend that precedes Easter on most of the calendars, right? All right. Now that we've given a lot of fake news,
yes,
we will move right along here. Listen, to wrap up our conversation about the Ukrainian-Russian war, tomorrow is a big day, and we should all pray for the meeting by phone between President Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin, because probably everything hinges on that. At least you would think that these both parties would have. Now, the United States is basically negotiating on behalf of Ukraine. Am I right?
He's trying. I think President Trump is acting as a mediator.
Okay.
Between Putin and Zelensky, and going back and forth. That's why he kind of has a deal, and then Zelensky says okay, and then he says no. So,
well,
he's acting like a mediator.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens tomorrow, but it could be a big day for peace, right? Could be.
Yeah.
Or not. It could be more war ahead. That's why it's so important to pray for that. Pray for that phone call, because that could determine, you know, it could determine a lot of lives.
At least get us to a ceasefire in Ukraine. That would be a step one.
Yes.
Get there.
But last week, Russian President Putin said, we'd like a 30-day ceasefire, but would not if Ukraine is simply going to rearm and prepare to continue to fight. So we want guarantees of this and guarantees of that. There's so many details. That's why I say if Trump can pull something off and get all sides to agree, that's huge.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking the other day, if you look around the world and then you look at world history, wars are basically fought over land. Not always. There are wars that are sometimes fought over ideology.
Right.
But I would say the vast majority of wars and conflicts are over land. Let's look at Israel. It's over. Yes, it is a war between religions, so to speak, but it's more a war over land. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the Ukrainian-Russian situation, the war is over land. Should China go to war with Taiwan, it would be over land.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the history of the world, conquering lands, which includes then conquering peoples, and oftentimes in the history of the world, enslaving those peoples, right?
Well, I mean, that's what we did in pushing west in this country. You know,
what did we do?
Well, we took land from Native Americans. It was a war of conquest. We took land from Mexico.
Right.
You know, because
you're going to give it back?
No, I mean, that's what happens.
That's what I'm saying. That's the history of human.
It is.
Of the human race,
and,
right?
And Indians took land from Indians. The Comanches obliterated
before the Europeans ever arrived.
Entire tribes. Well, I think we were around, I mean, in the eastern part of the country, but the Comanches came out of the northern Rockies, and they took land. They obliterated entire tribes.
The Sioux or who?
Well, not the Sioux. They were Kiowa, and anyway, I don't remember all that history. I just remember the Comanches, and they were a real threat to the United States as we pushed west. But that is what people do. It's not just white people, and it's not just Americans who do that.
Look
what's
happening in Africa.
That's what professors want
to. What happened in Africa right now?
Right.
The warring tribes there, which are eternal. It's a black folks on black folks.
Yeah.
The war in Ukraine and Russia is white people against white people. If you want to, so it's not ethnicity.
Well, you look
oftentimes at it's tribal.
In our inner cities where you have multiple gangs, guess what? They have turf. You don't cross streets such and such. That's our turf. And we run the drug and the prostitution. We get the money from that. on our turf. You come into our turf, we're going to have conflict.
Yeah.
This is human. This is fallen human nature. I'm not excusing it. We're just trying to understand it.
Yeah. But the history of the world is people warring over land. And that's, I guess that's the way it'll always will be until Jesus comes back, right?
Yeah.
It sets up his kingdom on earth. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Next story, Fred.
Well, also on the weekend, we learned that U.S. forces attacked the Houthi rebels, which are based in Yemen. Now, you probably heard a lot of the Houthi rebels over the last several years because they keep attacking ships under various flags that are passing from the Gulf of Aden into the Red Sea. And so on the weekend, our forces, and according to authorities, we took out 53 of these Houthi rebels. Our Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, talked about this on the weekend, cut number four.
We're sitting on 4 years of deferred maintenance from Joe Biden, where in particular, when you talk about the Houthis, they were allowed for over 100 times to shoot at U.S. Ships. To shoot at commercial shipping. 4 months ago, when we sent a ship through, it was shot at 17 times. Ships haven't been able to go through for over a year without being shot at. Freedom of navigation is basic. And President Trump has said, we will restore that and we will be unrelenting. I want to be very clear. This campaign is about freedom of navigation and restoring deterrence. The minute the Houthis say, we'll stop shooting at your ships, we'll stop shooting at your drones, this campaign will end. But until then, it will be unrelenting.
Now, the Houthi rebels responded to this. They sent out about a dozen drones and a missile, and our forces shot every one of those things down.
I think the missile just fell into the water.
Yeah.
It was a dud. I'm looking at a story on Fox News talking about the Iranians are vowing to respond, quote, decisively and destructively.
Yeah.
To any threats after President Donald Trump said he ordered American forces to launch military action against Houthis in Yemen. Iran, frankly, is fortunate that President Trump does not want to widen this, because he could say, and this would probably kick off World War III, but he could say, no, for every attack from the Houthis who are supplied and supported by Iran, we will consider that an Iranian aggression, and we will respond in Iran. That's something that could happen.
Yes, and our Secretary of State Marco Rubio is echoing your words. Cut number five.
There's no way the Houthis, okay, the Houthis would have the ability to do this kind of thing unless they had support from Iran. And so this was a message to Iran. Don't keep supporting them, because then you will also be responsible for what they are doing in attacking Navy ships, in attacking global shipping.
I absolutely believe that Iran is trying to spread their influence and trying to get the West out of that part of the world. And we should be, of course, very cautious before we widen the war. But that's why you have the exchange of words with Marco Rubio and this Iranian general who's speaking on behalf of Iran.
These Houthis, right? Is that what you call them?
Houthi. Yeah. Houthi.
Which they never should have separated from the blowfish. But that's kind of a second. Huh? What? Are we talking about two different things here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Houthis and the blowfish.
I just been waiting.
No, that was funny.
I just been waiting to use that joke. That's bad. I understand that. But listen, this particular terrorist organization, which is like Hamas or Hezbollah, or ISIS, or, my goodness, just go down the list, Muslim Brotherhoods, go down the list of terrorist organizations in the Middle East, huh? There's like the top 10, right? But anyway, these Houthis, they're based out of Yemen, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, Yemen sits on the, which ocean is that? Or it's the Indian Ocean, but what is the sea lane that?
It's the Gulf of Aden. Yemen kind of is
it sticks out there
to the north of Gulf of Aden and to the southeast of Red Sea,
south of Saudi Arabia.
So it's a separate country than Saudi Arabia.
Correct.
Yes, and then it's kind of like that elbow of the Saudi
but
peninsula.
What it is, it's strategically placed for this terrorist organization to fire its ships that come through that strait there.
Yes.
I'm looking at that. And then they access the Suez Canal.
That's right. Red Sea, Suez Canal.
Yes.
So that's very narrow.
Yes. It's almost like the Gibraltar Strait.
Yes.
There in Spain and Morocco. It's very narrow. And so they're firing weapons from land at our merchant ships.
And not just ours.
And our military.
Everybody, yeah.
And not just ours. They're trying to control that. So
they want them out. They want the West out.
Right. So the U.S. has President Trump order military strikes, Air Force strikes, I guess, Air Force or Navy.
I think it's out of our carrier
group.
Task force,
which
there.
Would be naval,
be Navy
pilots, naval planes, to strike them, and he's going to continue to do so. He said that he will rain down hell on these people if they don't stop. Right.
Right.
Yep.
That's what President Trump said over the weekend. You know, the world has changed so drastically since Biden left. Biden was just, I don't know, we want to repeat this and go down memory lane again. He was just so pathetically weak to the extent that he even knew what was going on.
He's like a cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
I mean, just there's just nothing there.
You know what he did in response to Israel and Hamas? He spent millions and millions of dollars building a floating dock in Gaza so that we could bring food ashore and not be have our ships attacked. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Remember this?
Oh yeah.
And this thing didn't last very long. It broke apart. It was like a big boondoggle, big waste of money. You're going like, why are you doing this? That was Biden's response to the Israeli-Hamas conflict, is to build Hamas a flotilla that we could dock our ships on and bring them food. I mean, it's just weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like weird reaction to events. And then to the extent that he even knew what was going on, Biden, I'm talking about. You know, again, I'll reiterate this. I've mentioned it many times here in the past. I'm just, and maybe I shouldn't be, I'm a little, well, no, I'm not stunned because I know why they did it, but the Democrats who propped Biden up, I'm talking about physically and mentally, propped him up, like, as I said, like Weekend at Bernie's, where they acted like this guy was president when he wasn't even signing things.
Right.
With his hand. He was using auto sign.
Or somebody was using auto
pen.
Somebody,
yeah.
But the fact that the Democrats let him go on in this condition and put our country at risk in so many ways just goes to show you all they cared about was the political power. Now, you may say, well, Tim, Shazam, you know, wow, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Who doesn't care about just political power? Well, I'm just talking about, here's what the Democrats should have done. They should have told him he had to go. Talking about Biden, you're incapacitated. You're unable to serve. You don't even know what's going on half the time. You don't remember meeting with us yesterday. And they let him go on for a year or more in this condition when I'm not saying they relinquish power and say, here, turn it over to the Republicans. All they had to do, that's why we have a vice president.
Right.
All they should have done was say, Biden, you have to step down. You don't know what's going on half the time. And we're turning the White House over to the vice president, Kamala Harris, which, by the way, I guess hindsight's 2020, but probably would have given her a better head start on. I don't think she would have won anyway because I think she's not really up to the task.
Right.
Talking about Kamala Harris of being president. But I'm just saying that would have been the right thing to do.
Well, and that may be the fact that she probably was not up to the task might have been another reason why they didn't do it.
We'd rather have a dead man walking.
Well, because
or a dead man sitting.
It will expose her inability to win the president's, that she should never be president because they had nobody else. It was a whole catastrophe on the Democratic side, and they deserved what they got from it because what they did was not right in pretending for 4 years that the man they asked everyone else to get elected, including Bernie Sanders and all the rest of them, he was not fit for the office. They knew it, and so they got themselves in a jam and couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Well, to go along with what you guys are saying about the Democratic Party, there is a brand new NBC poll that's out. I guess it came out on the weekend. This is NBC News, folks. This isn't Fox News. This isn't some conservative organization. Just over a quarter of registered voters, 27%, say they have a positive view of the Democratic Party.
That's lowest ever, right?
That is the party's lowest positive rating in NBC News polling dating back to 1990. Now, this poll was done even before the huge internal explosion in the Democratic Party this past weekend. When last we met on this program on Thursday, we were facing a government shutdown. The Republicans in the House had voted in favor, and every Democrat voted against this, what was called the continuing resolution, the budget to keep the government going for another 6 months. So it was passed over to the Senate. And the House Republicans were saying to Chuck Schumer, the Democrat head in the Senate, do what we did in the House. Reject this. We'll shut the government down and blame the Republicans for this. The Republicans said, go ahead. Go ahead and do it. Because the American people will have to blame you if you don't support this in the Senate. And Chuck Schumer backed down late on Friday. He backed down and said, okay, we'll vote in favor of it. His reasoning was, we Democrats will get blamed for this shutdown, and it'll give Donald Trump an opportunity to cut even more people out of government. So, interesting, Democrat pollster Douglas Schoen, who was big in the Clinton administration, he was interviewed this morning on this and on this poll, which is dismal for the Democratic Party. So he was asked about this, and basically he said the Democratic Party is in total disarray. Cut nine.
What surprised me about the poll is how quickly the American people and even Democrats recognize the degree of disorganization, chaos, and lack of strategic direction my party has. I feel that they're heading towards further destruction and devaluation of a brand that is at an all-time low. They're so angry with Trump, what you know the pundits have called Trump derangement syndrome, is such that people can't put the greater interests of the country and indeed the party ahead of their narrow partisan interests. Right now, the poll is correct. We are leaderless, rudderless, and directionless.
Later on in this interview on Fox this morning, he was asked, can you pick anybody in the Democratic Party who can shepherd the party out of this mess? Nope, can't do it. He doesn't see any hope in Newsom. Doesn't see any hope in Governor Whitmer in Michigan. And nobody's talking about Buttigieg, except Buttigieg is talking about himself.
Who?
Pete Buttigieg.
Pete Buttigieg.
Who?
You just want us to keep saying.
I just wanted to hear you say Buttigieg.
Yes.
Is that how you pronounce it?
What'd you say? Pronounce what?
Buttigieg?
It gets tricky the more
Mayor Pete, formerly Secretary of, what was he, Secretary of?
Transportation.
Yep. No, he's not. He's not. He's not going to be the new leader of the Democrat Party. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to make a prediction. The only person that, and I don't even know too much about this guy because I haven't seen him in action, but I've heard him speak maybe once or twice. The governor of Pennsylvania,
Josh Shapiro,
would be the kind of person, what I could tell by his personality, that would emerge as a leader of the Democrat Party. But the problem for him is he's a Jew.
Right.
And the Democrat Party is split between those who don't like Jews and those who are Jewish, and or they do like Jews. Am I right?
Yeah, and that's this is the this is
they wouldn't the say it like that,
right? The problem for the Democratic Party is in trying to defeat Donald Trump in 2016 and trying to defeat Donald Trump in 2020. It appears, now I can't say I know this for a fact, but as an outsider, it appears that the Democratic Party leadership made a deal with the devil. They said to the radicals, so that would include the pro-Palestinian / pro-Hamas individuals, that would include the LGBTQ and / radical transgender people, all those kinds of people, and the socialists, like Bernie Sanders. They said, if you will help us defeat Trump and in 2020 get Joe Biden elected, we'll share power with you and we will do what you want in terms of policy. That means the party is filled. Probably the most energetic parts of the Democratic Party are these far leftists, what I call radical, the radical left. And so how do you nominate someone like Shapiro when you're going to have people screaming about Israeli oppression of Palestinians? And so the Democratic Party and people like Doug Schoen, they're going to have to decide if they're going to move back to the traditional liberals of the Democratic Party yesteryear and drive out a third or more of their most energetic voters. They're stuck.
Meanwhile, every day with Donald Trump is another day their hair's on fire.
Yes.
Come at these Democrats, because the reason they're discombobulated primarily is because President Trump is what they call in sports flooding the zone.
Yeah.
And it's one day after, they don't know. Schumer said this a couple weeks ago. We don't know where to start.
Yeah.
You know. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.